This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. This week, Georgia Governor Nathan Deal easily won the Republican nomination for a second term. He now turns his attention to the November general election, where he will face Democratic Atlanta State Senator Jason Carter. Governor Deal joins us in his campaign office in Atlanta. Governor, welcome. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Dennis. I'm greatly humbled by the margin of victory, and I certainly thank all of those voters who saw fit to support me on Election Day.
Your primary campaign centered around themes of education and the economy and accomplishments there. Those are exactly the areas where Senator Carter has promised to go after you. Let's start with education. You put $500 million in new spending in the fiscal 15 budget for K through 12 education, but that still left about $750 million in austerity cuts that are ongoing. How would you respond to the accusation, which I'm sure will come, that there still is a crisis in educational funding and it hasn't been addressed?
Well, I think for some people there will never be enough money to do everything that they think government should do. I think what we have to do is live within the realities of the time, and that's what we have done. We have budgeted conservatively, but we have increased K through 12 funding every year that I have been governor. This year, we had the luxury of having an additional amount of revenue, and we devoted a good portion of it, over that $500 million, to K through 12 funding. The reality is that if you're going to do anything to improve the quality of education and those things are going to cost money, you need to have an economy that will support that. I'm not going to advocate raising taxes. For those who say that we need more money, what they're really saying is code word for saying, we need to raise your taxes. You're just not paying enough right now. I believe we have shown that we can make substantial improvements in our economy, in our workforce, and in education. With the money that our revenue is going to bring in right now, we are on a very upward tick, and fortunately that's true. But you don't see your revenue increase unless you have the job base and the economic factors that are in place now in Georgia that are going to continue to grow. As we continue to grow our economy, we'll have money available to improve education.
If you're saying, look, we can't spend a lot more on education than we already are because of the economy, doesn't that lend some evidence to your opponent's argument that the economy hasn't moved fast enough under your administration?
Maybe he should talk to President Obama of his party about that. Many people in the business community would say that this administration has put a blanket on economic growth in our country. I believe that it has. Fortunately for the state of Georgia, though, in spite of that, we've seen our economy grow. Over 250,000 new jobs in the private sector since I became governor 3.5 years ago. Our revenue continuing to grow, and we're going to see approximately a 5% increase in revenue for our fiscal year that's coming to an end very soon. Those are the kind of things that you have to have is sustained economic growth. Now, education has always been a priority. It is the highest component of state spending, and it is being rivaled, quite frankly, though, by the ever-increasing cost of the federal health care mandates, which are continuing to eat into our state's budget. And when that happens, it makes less money available for us to do things like spend on education.
One of his proposals is, if education is the biggest portion of the state budget, which it is, why not have a separate budgeting process for education and do that first and then have everything else fit in? What's wrong with that?
Well, that's the old Democrat model. Let's create silos and put things in silos. For anybody who advocates that they don't want to exercise the responsibility associated with elected office of making choices, then silos fit their model very well. I'm someone who's willing to make hard choices. I've demonstrated that. I don't think we need to put money into silos just to do what needs to be right. If you have the right ideas and the right programs, then you can convince the members of the General Assembly to put money into it. They don't have to be convinced of that. They don't have to have their hands tied and say, we're going to put this amount of money off limits and give you no discretion about it. Education will always be the highest priority for our state in terms of budget cost.
But is this really putting it in a separate budget? It's the same budget. It's just a different kind of approval process and saying, okay, we're going to do this process in a different way.
It sounds to me like a gimmick. It sounds like a campaign gimmick to me. I think we have shown that we can be responsible, and we have been responsible in both Democratic governors' leadership in the past as well as Republican governors' leadership. I think this is just something that sounds like a good idea, hasn't been tested, doesn't know what the outcome of it's going to be, doesn't know what the impact on the overall budget is going to be. I don't go for gimmicks. I go for things that make a difference, and I think we've shown that.
Speaking of taxes, there is right now in the legislature an effort to look at the state's tax code, and there have been efforts before to put in some kind of consumption tax instead of the system we have now, which includes a state income tax. Is that something that you're saying you would spearhead, if you will, in a second term?
I have always thought that a consumption-based tax is one of the fairer taxes. It allows people but to make their own choices about how they spend their money. The reality, though, is that in the state of Georgia, about half of the revenue of our state comes from personal income tax. And the main advocation of change has been to substitute income tax for a sales tax, which is a consumption tax, of course. There are many factors that you have to look at. I think one of the things you have to always be cautious about is in making a change that is significantly impactful on your overall revenue for the state of Georgia, that you do not put yourself in a posture where you cannot sustain the important things like funding for education, like the funding obligations we have for health care. So, yes, I am open to those discussions. I think they will be hopefully fruitful discussions. There are things that could make that decision a little easier. I would like, for example, to see Congress pass the Main Street Fairness Act, which will allow states like Georgia to collect sales tax on internet retail sales. I believe it's fair. Those who have brick-and-mortar stores, they're paying taxes, but their competition, if they're selling over the internet, by and large, are free from that responsibility.
Back to the sales tax for just a second. Are you concerned that that might have a disproportionate impact on those who can afford it the least?
That's always the argument about any consumption tax, is that it hits those who have to spend a higher proportion of their revenue on consumer goods. That is an argument that is worth discussing. It is one worth looking at. And I think it requires that we do it in a balanced fashion.
But doesn't the state have to raise revenue somehow for some of the pressing issues that would face the state in trying to stay competitive with others? For instance, our infrastructure, our transit system, these are huge capital outlays, and right now we don't have the money for them, it seems. So where does that come from?
Well, that is always true. There are certain basic requirements that government has to meet, and that requires revenue in order to do that. We have seen a crisis situation developing right now with regard to the uncertainty of a federal surface transportation bill. And we're told that the money that we pay into gasoline taxes to the federal government, that the trust fund is going to run out of money. We've just made adjustments for that at the state level in order to prioritize some of the projects that are very important to us, one of those being the 400 I-285 interchange, and by virtue of prioritizing that project, rearranging our funding mechanism, we're actually able to accelerate the time frame of that very important transportation project. Yes, there will always be demands for the cost of infrastructure, and when you start talking about things like improving your interstates, those are very expensive projects,
which often take, as you mentioned, federal funding. What would you say to people who say, look, you know, we're not expanding the Medicaid program right now because of federal mandates, and we argue about what the federal government's role is in state decision-making, but we certainly want federal money for highways and for the Port of Savannah and all of these things. Can we have it both ways?
Well, it's always a matter of deciding what the priorities really are. I think in terms of infrastructure costs that are funded by gasoline tax that Georgia drivers pay, that's one thing. It goes into a dedicated trust fund. and we're entitled to get that money back from the federal government. Now, if you want to take that argument to an extreme, you would say, well, just have the federal government start collecting the taxes and let the state do it to begin with. I'm not advocating that. But on the other hand, when you start talking about expanding entitlement programs that have no independent funding source other than general revenue, and you're expecting a federal government that's already trillions of dollars in debt to be able to come up with extra trillions of dollars to pay for it, that's a very different proposition altogether. Now, on that point, let me make this point. One of the reasons I said we did not think it was appropriate to expand Medicaid as advocated by the Obama administration is that we already knew we were going to have an expansion of our existing Medicaid program as a result of the Affordable Care Act. We're already seeing that happen. In fact, we've told our folks that they said we think we are going to have about 100,000 new people who are currently eligible but not enrolled in state Medicaid come on our rolls. The last I saw, it was up to almost 100,000. And so our projections are pretty well correct. Now, those 100,000 are not going to be paid for 100% by the federal government. They're going to be paid for on the formula that we currently have in place, and it's going to cost the state more money to cover them.
Will you say in the campaign that we will continue to refuse to expand the Medicaid rolls under the Affordable Care Act itself?
I think the Supreme Court answered that question. They said the only way that that whole act could be sustained as being constitutional was if that portion of it, the mandate on states, was stricken. I think it's time the Obama administration acknowledged the Supreme Court opinion. I would hope that they would address some of the issues that only Congress can address to solve this problem. But I've advocated all along, give the money that you say you're willing to spend on expanding health care opportunities, give it to the state in a block grant. Put some broad guidelines as to what we can spend it for, and we'll show you that if you will take the micromanagement off of our backs, we can make the dollars go further and have a more effective and a broader coverage base for our program.
Will this position, though, mean that we'll have people who are uninsured, may not be eligible for Medicaid, but can't afford health care, and a lot of Georgians going to emergency rooms and places like that to find their medical care?
Well, that's the issue that has supposedly prompted this entire adventure into the Affordable Care Act was to have coverage for the uninsured. Unfortunately, instead of exempting programs such as state health benefit plans that already covered our state employees, instead of exempting local governments who already provided health care for their employees, the umbrella included them all. And it has cost the state of Georgia millions of dollars to comply with that. Now, the better way of doing that is to allow states to continue to provide the coverage for their employees as we had historically always done and not be told what we have to do by the federal government. So, uninsured, I don't think they have shown us that what they have cost us millions and perhaps trillions of dollars now in new money, that it has significantly reduced the number of insureds in this country.
One of the arguments from Senator Carter already has been ethics and the recent decision by a jury saying that Stacey Kalberman, the former State Ethics Committee chief, was wrongly let go, I guess, if you will. And the implication, at least from some of the jurors, was, well, if your office was not involved directly in what happened with Stacey Kalberman and the investigation into your campaign, that there was that contact to find a replacement for her as head of the Ethics Commission. How would you respond to that, and what would you say to people who think, okay, even if there was no direct involvement, the changing of the commission executive director, if you will, affected the investigation?
Well, first of all, under our law, the Ethics Commission is an independent agency. It is made up of independent individuals who have the right to hire and fire the staff that works for them. All of those decisions were made by that Ethics Commission. The lawsuit was against the Ethics Commission. If my office or me individually had involvement in that, I think there would have been an inclusion of us in the lawsuit, which it was not. We had no involvement in that. That was a decision that the Ethics Commission itself made.
But didn't your executive counsel, Ryan Teague, contact Holly LaBerge, who was eventually hired to head up the Ethics Commission staff?
My executive counsel got a phone call from a member of the Ethics Commission asking if he knew of anyone who might be interested in talking to them about a position with the commission. We get
those. So you're saying you did not initiate that?
No, not at all. I didn't know about it until well after the fact. We get those kind of calls from department heads and agencies all the time. Do you know of somebody in state government who might want to make a change or might be looking to go to another agency? Now, if that's the involvement, that is a very thin line to be able to place any responsibility on. He did understand that Holly LaBerge might be interested in moving from where she was with the public defender's office. He relayed that information to the Ethics Commission. They made the judgment call about whether there were other people, I understand, interviewed besides her. They're the ones who made that call. Now, if that's all that they can hang their hat on, that is a very thin line. They would have us say to the Ethics Commission, we're not going to talk to you. Don't ask us for the names of anybody who might be interested in working for you. I don't think that's an appropriate response. I think that is not the thing that should happen. Now, in terms of reforms of the Ethics Commission, yes. I've already made a proposal whereby we could eliminate the conflicts that might appear to exist so that if a complaint is filed against a member of the executive branch of government, any member of the Ethics Commission that had been appointed by the executive branch would be disqualified. The same would be true of the legislative branch. Same would be true of the judicial branch. My opponent, however, has suggested that we ought to just let the judicial branch handle that exclusively. Well, I would remind him that the members of the judicial branch of government are also subject to the ethics laws of this state. And if you want to avoid conflicts, how can you simply say one agency is better qualified to rule on their own on their own complaints and allegations than the other two branches of government? I think we need to do it in a fashion similar to what I have advocated.
But real quickly, what would you say to someone who said this proposal of yours is fine, but it could have happened before the verdict from the jury and that this was just a response to that?
And I think you and others in the media would have said, there the governor goes, tampering with the Ethics Commission. It was not an appropriate time for me to be able to make those kind of suggestions. But it is an issue that deserves serious, serious concern in terms of reorganization and structure. You do not need to create any agency whereby you cannot fire employees for not doing their job, for not showing up on time, for showing up under conditions that do not lend themselves to being able to carry on their job. You should never create an agency within government where that becomes hands-off in terms of dealing with those kind of personnel problems. I'm afraid we have that situation now. It needs to be fixed, not for me, but I think for everybody that is subject to the laws.
Given the closeness of the polls right now, are you nervous that this would be a tougher race than perhaps you might expect in a state that still is in the GOP column?
Well, I never take any election for granted. I work hard from the beginning to the end. I intend to do that this time. I'm running on my record. I'm running on a record of promises that have been made and promises that have been kept. That's a slogan that's sort of old in politics, but I think you can say that for the promises I made that I was going to create better job opportunities for our citizens, we have lived up to that obligation. Over a quarter million new jobs in 3.5 years in the private sector is a huge record, and those numbers continue to grow every day. We're going to keep our budget balanced. We're going to maintain a AAA bond rating, something that only 9 states have been able to do. Those are promises I made, and those are promises that I've kept. We're going to reform our education system so that it better tailors the delivery of education for our students and those who attend our technical schools and our colleges and universities so they can get a job. We've made huge strides in those directions. I think it is because of the initiatives that I have taken, because of the cooperation that I have received from the business community, from the members of the General Assembly, and by the public at large. You know, I got almost as many votes as Jason Carter and Michelle Nunn combined. I think that's an indication of where the people of this state stand.
Georgia Governor Nathan Deal. Governor Deal, congratulations, good luck, and thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis.